From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known.
No, I'm just getting in practice. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union.
Why are you having a grandchild?
Vocalizing, getting ready for speaking to Dr. Alan Chartok. No.
That's what
the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
That's what our little grandson says all the time. No.
Well, he knows you well. Yeah. And Rosemary Armeo is here, investigative journalist and director of the journalism program at UAlbany. Rosemary, it's wonderful to see you.
Oh, thank you.
And to smell you, Rosemary.
It's a great thing. Alan.
Rosemary has patchouli on today.
That's wonderful. I love it. It's made by
grinding up dead hippies.
Now I know what Hillary Clinton goes through.
You know, can you imagine? Amazing. Dear Alan, it says here on this piece of email.
I wonder why that is.
Yes, Eleanor writes in who says, I am disgusted, she says, dear Alan, with NPR coverage of the election. Almost every news cycle starts with DT, meaning Donald Trump, presumably not delirium tremens. One day, they were allegedly discussing how he is running into trouble in a state he should be sweeping. For the first three people they were interviewed were all voting for him. They couldn't find a single person in the state who was voting for Mrs. Clinton. For the first time ever, I'm turning off the radio, Eleanor says. At this point, even fair and unbiased coverage, I think she means fair and balanced, like Fox, would be a relief. I conveyed my disapproval to NPR and hope you do the same by finding alternatives such as more BBC programming.
And by the way, I think Michael Oreskes, who is a wonderful man and who is somebody you and I know quite well from the day back in the day over here in Albany, and then writing for the New York Times, now the top man at NPR News, he wrote her a long, thoughtful letter back.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I think NPR coverage has been quite strong. I'm very impressed by listening to NPR coverage by comparison to other electronic outlets. And the notion that NPR is biased in favor of Donald Trump, I think almost any Republican would find rather laughable, don't you think?
I can't figure out where it's from. I don't know what she's heard that set that off.
I think what happens is that, the passions are running so high right now that people are looking for anything they can possibly find. I mean, I'm getting letters when I try to play the devil's advocate on our other news program, Rosemary, getting letters, how dare you, who do you think you are, you're really a...
Oh, this is the show that you go to after we tape here, you say the same things that I have taught you here.
After you've taught us that. That's right, Rexy.
Glad to help. It's here, when you're in the room with a couple of professors, you have to do what you can.
Where did you get that thin tie you're wearing today?
It's thin tie. Thin it's lovely, tie. Isn't it? It's a purple. It's a nice purple tie.
It's a UAlbany tie.
It's an honor of UAlbany. That's right. That's
thin.
A wonderful thing.
Well, the governor says UAlbany is the culprit in all of his troubles lately.
The governor of New York, yes, he says.
I have not heard this.
Yes, he says that most
Separate
of
agency.
The stuff is that it is UAlbany purchasing, he said, that has gotten people into trouble, led to the indictments brought by the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District. There you have to do a little fact-checking, don't you? I mean, this is appropriate when we're talking about fact-checking and debates. There, it is entirely appropriate when the governor says this, then I think for the next sentence in an article to say, actually, the indictments were not entirely focused on UAlbany purchasing.
Well, it may have something to do with UAlbany purchasing, but may I just say, this is a governor who appoints the entire board of SUNY, who appoints the chairman of the board of SUNY, who has been known to be using SUNY as a plaything for his own economic development program, who has championed the guy who is in real deep trouble here, Elaine Calieros. And also, we shouldn't forget that his two closest friends, one of whom has pled guilty already, is at the bottom of the whole scheme. That ain't exactly University of Albany purchasing.
Yeah, it is interesting to note that corruption just breeds like crazy when there's secrecy and darkness. And certainly there was an effort at the highest levels to keep what was going on as far as purchasing and planning for projects at the Nano College to be kept out of the public purview. I can remember when the Times Union wanted information on massive changes to Fuller Road, which is a public course, mm-hmm. and it was expenditure of state money, another completely supposedly public enterprise, and you couldn't get the information on that, even that was kept secret.
And it was already under construction, and
still wouldn't talk about what was going on. It was the height of
chutzpah.
By public officials, and then to make sure that the comptroller, the state comptroller, could not look into the
affairs. That's a very important point you're making here.
It is. I wish you Albany were that powerful, but it is not. And so to take that massive institution, which went far beyond education and into development, and to take that out of the public purview, is it any surprise that now someone armed with a subpoena actually got at some bad truths that would have come out earlier?
And I don't want to use a term that is made popular by Donald Trump and his vice presidential Mr. Pence. Which
puppet is the word you were trying for.
Huge, is that the word?
No,
this is huge.
Feckless.
Feckless.
Feckless is all over the place. You know, it is feckless of the state legislature who took this power, Cuomo's obvious suggestion, took the power away from the controller to look into this stuff and might have prevented it all. It is feckless for them not to put it back in there so he has that power again.
The power in there, by the way, going back to the media issue, is sunlight.
Oh,
it is actually, when the controller, of course, has no authority other than in that regard, other than bring light to something, and his vehicle usually is the media. So if you get, if a controller releases something, the press puts it out to the public says, wow, why is that secrecy underway? What's going on there? People tend, though, not to care so much about whether we have access to information. You can't get citizens very riled up, unfortunately, about the issue of openness in government. It's really hard.
I think that we're seeing a current example of that in election coverage, which is that the Trump Foundation is not properly registered to solicit funds in the state of New York. Now, how did we find this out? Not from the Attorney General, who oversees this, not from any institution of government, but from a reporter who's looking around, kind of stumbling around. Certainly he goes into this David Fahrenthold I'm talking about from the Washington Post, has no particular knowledge, he says, of charity law. And he stumbles on some sources who say, yeah, that is kind of interesting. And they look into it and they tell him. They say, hey, this isn't done right. And lo and behold, he publishes it, and then the government acts. So I always say that I have to laugh when I hear people say we don't need a press. We have lots of regulators. In fact, we have too much regulation. We may have too much regulation for the sense of businessmen, but we sure don't for looking at wrongdoing.
You know, you're right. David Fahrenthold's reporting from the Washington Post has been really powerful here. But I do have to say that the state attorney general's charges against involving the SUNY Poly here derived from a Times Union investigation.
Another reporter,
A reporter. Preet Bharara, actually, when he came into our editorial board, Preet Bharara is who I'm appearing with tonight, which is why I'm wearing a purple tie and a white shirt, to look like the people that you're dealing with.
What's the appearance?
He's doing a forum at College of St. Rose on corruption in government, and he and the federal judge, and they want to have a media person there to talk about the role of the media in uncovering corruption. This is very topic we're talking about.
It's huge.
Absolutely
huge. Just tell
huge.
Them that.
And you deserve it, Rex, because your newspaper, the Albany Times Union, has done a wonderful job here.
Well, thank you. In that little regard, we really did
find
that the property is being bought up by a particular developer who, before the university decided they're going to build a dorm there. It was very clear what was going on, but of course they denied it. But this guy, Fahrenthold at the Washington Post, I mean, he's the guy who, he found this fun stuff, that Trump used foundation money to buy a $20,000 6-foot-tall portrait of himself.
He did a lot of this, too, with crowdsourcing. Do you know what that is? Where you go on Twitter. Or other social media and he goes, I'm interested in Trump's charities. Like, tell me if you're a veteran or a veterans organization who got money from him, I want to hear from you.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's how we got into the story that Trump did not donate any money until David Fahrenthold was writing about how he didn't give any money. And then he was writing about the purchases from charities and these pictures. And members of the public went out to his to Trump's Florida estates and snuck in at night. They didn't sneak in. They got hotel staff to let them in to take pictures of the portrait to see where it actually hung. They were doing his legwork for him. It's quite brilliant.
It is. It's great. That's one of the great advantages of the digital age these days, which you know takes a lot more work on the part of reporters. You could say that it siphons time that you could spend investigating, but on the other hand, it gives you vehicles to get access to information you wouldn't otherwise have.
He says in a piece that he, when you use crowdsourcing as he does, you get lots of tips that you really want to be true. They're so juicy, and then you have to spend all this time, and of course, nothing comes of it. But
and very often those are things that people read in the newspaper, but they don't remember that they read in the newspaper.
Right.
And now they're telling you,
how come nobody ever reports? Right. How come nobody knows about this? Yeah, right. Oy. So what about this? The Times did this reporting on Trump's taxes. In the mailbox of Suzanne Craig, who actually used to be the Albany bureau chief for the New York Times, who's been trying to track Trump's taxes because this was a specialty of hers before she turned to politics. In this mailbox suddenly appears this anonymous envelope with
Manila envelope
forms.
With a return address that indicates it's coming from Trump headquarters.
Could be true or could be.
I think it's Marla. I think Marla sent them in.
Woohoo!
And you know why
his,
I think
his
this?
Ex-wife.
Marla is his ex-wife. Here's why I think
the second wife, yes.
He never cheated on her, that's for sure.
Short-lived second wife, Tiffany's mom. First, it's not illegal for her to give the tax return out. Right. It's hers. It's a joint return. So it's not illegal for her. Even if she's caught, they can't send her to jail. Anybody else could be prosecuted for illegal release.
Yeah.
And second, in all the Times reporting and in all the Times reporters' appearances, have you ever heard them say anything about, we reached out to Marla to confirm whether this was true or not?
No.
Not a word of it.
Interesting.
And that would be typical. They say, we reached out to Trump. He had no comment. We got his accountant. He's the one who confirmed it. Not a word about Marla.
I have another theory.
Isn't that interesting?
That's cool.
I have another theory.
Okay,
you guys will poo-poo, which you usually do.
Probably.
We should just go ahead and do it. No. See? It's a good thing I vocalized at the beginning.
No. But here's what I'm thinking. I think that the Trump people knew, because this tax stuff was so great, that they were going to have to eventually put them out there. And the way this is done in politics, you guys don't know this because you don't hold the PhD. But I was like, the PhD. You don't hold that.
The PhD.
So here's the way it's often done. If you know something embarrassing is going to come out, you leak it yourselves, and then what happens is when it comes out, you say, oh, that was old news. Everybody already knew that. And so I'm thinking maybe they sent it themselves.
Well, that's an interesting concept.
That's an interesting idea.
Hey, this idea, though, that Marla Maples Trump was the source is an interesting thing. I heard an editor about 20 years ago say something, and let me see how this passes the ethics test. She said that she thought it was fine for a reporter in a story who, let's say the source had been Marla Maples Trump, to write in the story, Marla Maples Trump said she had no comment, when in fact she might have been the anonymous source for the story. If she had, in fact, on the record said no comment, when
so is that
off the
ethical?
Record, what do you think
you
about
can
that?
You can say she had no on the record source, but that kind of gives it away. Mm-hmm. It would be a lie and thus unethical to say she had no comment if she was, in
I
fact.
I thought so too.
So I think the answer should be just what the Times did, and it leads to my theory,
which could be
crazy. And then the other thing that's happening is that it's only three pages. It's not even the full return. It's now out. And all these other people are doing other reporting on it, which is the great thing about a wonderful story with legs. Everybody then picks up on it. And you're seeing business publications writing about the loss, concentrating not on the payment, but how did he accumulate nearly $1 billion in losses in 1 year? And it may have been the result of a bizarre little loophole in the law that came as a mistake when they redid the tax code. And it did allow a business like Trump's to take the full loss for everybody, not just what he lost in the business and the casinos, but the banks and everything else. So it ends up being $1 billion. That law and that loophole was caught. The Supreme Court said, you know, that's what the law says. If you want this to change, you got to change the law. So Congress did change the law in 2002, I believe. And one of the signatories, one of the people who voted for it, was Hillary Clinton.
No!
So it could be that this loophole that she stopped is the way that he got this. So wow. In other words, it isn't even a legitimate loss. It's just a paper loss.
Uh-huh.
And he managed to get from that the right to not pay taxes for 20 years.
Now, Rosemary, you say it's a mistake, but I believe it was...
The law, the way the law was written was a mistake.
Right, just a mistake. The guys were sitting around the table and they made a mistake. However, as I believe it was Freud, somebody will correct me, who said, there is no mistake.
It must be true.
Kind of a technical error in the law is how I've heard it described in the reporting. But fascinating stuff.
Accidentally on purpose.
And this is not original to me, but it is absolutely true that this is now the perfect time for Bartlett and Steele or some other great reporters to start working on the tax code. We need stories out there about all of these kind of laws and rules. How is that? What Trump did, unethical, you know, kind of like morally bankrupt, yes, but it is not illegal. How did we get to this point? Mm-hmm. I would love to see stories on that
would
how
be
to
good.
Fix it.
The problem is, in referring to Bartlett and Steele, these are the noted investigative reporters for the Philadelphia Inquirer who some years ago won a Pulitzer Prize for writing about the American tax code, right? But only they have been able to convey it in a way that people found interesting. It's very hard.
Very difficult. You're absolutely right. All this stuff is really difficult, which is why did it even take this long in this campaign to get to this point?
Mm-hmm.
You
know? But it's so interesting because every time that there's an article, I believe in the Times as we speak, another sort of semi-expose on Trump and his taxes and the rest of it. The question is, those people, that 40% of the American electorate who are for Trump, they're not changing. Doesn't matter what comes out. All they see it as now is a bunch of noise.
Nevertheless, it is still important for the reporting to keep going on.
Absolutely.
Farenthold of the Post and everybody else is still at it.
As snotty as that sounded from your mouth, that is true.
If you're just joining us, this is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. He's Alan Chartok. He making these offensive little remarks in the corner. Rosemary Armeo from the University of Albany, and I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. What are the worst traits of the mainstream media, folks? There's a poll on this. I have the answer here, as Russians say, here in front of me.
Right. I have a paper.
So what do you think they're going to say? A new report from Pew says, what do conservative Republicans consider to be the worst offense? They say... What do you think?
They lie.
They're biased.
Biased, exactly. Biased reporting is what the conservative Republicans say. Now, what about the liberal Democrats? What about those on the other end of the spectrum from the conservative Republicans? What do they say is the worst negative about the media?
Bias.
Wrong. You would think that it would be the same thing. When it's not a mirror image, they say poor choices about what is reported. That is, overlooking important stories, in effect, is what the liberals consider to be.
Well, that would make sense. We don't report enough about the environment. We don't report enough about climate change.
What is the most positive thing about the news media? The conservative Republicans say that the most positive thing they can say is they report the news. The liberal Democrats say provide a service to the public by a wide margin that is there. But it's harder to find them saying nice things.
I can just see some politician filling out this form, you know, and saying, all right, now, if anybody ever gets a hold of this, I'm going to have a problem with my media conduct. Like, I can't be hitting them so hard that they'll hit me back.
Mm. Well, the overall approval, or not approval, a trust in the media is so low, again, by Pew Foundation's findings, that the few good things they say are, I'm not sure they're worth noting.
Right.
Well, you know, but there is an interesting aspect to what I just said, even though I said it.
Really?
Yeah.
That's how all the time.
You're a politician now. Now, get the analogy. If you're the fire department and they send you a letter saying, can you give them some money, you know, for their fireman whatever fund, what do? You say, yeah, okay. I don't want them showing up late at my house.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
So you send them a little money. Now, the same thing may stand true here with the press. You don't want to publicly tick them off too much because, you know, they may get you. Even if it's not true, there is a perception that they may get you.
You know, I'm not sure that it isn't true. I look at Donald Trump, who said to the Washington Post, I ban you. And Marty Baron, the wonderful editor there, says, we don't need revenge. We just will report.
Yeah.
That is what we do.
Yeah.
And you sick David Fahrenthold on. There's just no methods that are unethical at all. And he has, like, hammered at Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Is that not revenge? Would Barron have done that otherwise? I don't know.
I'm sure he would have. I think so. I think it was just, and it could well have been reporter generated, because most good ideas come from reporters' notebooks, not editors' desktops. You know?
It's so good to hear an editor
say that. And not only that, I remember why Trump banned them. It started because they were beating him up before Trump banned them. Obviously,
exactly.
He was reacting to something.
He didn't like their coverage even when he let them in.
These candidates talk about bias, but let's talk about where bias really exists or where opinion belongs, and that is in the editorial pages. Overwhelmingly, in fact, almost unanimously, every place that is writing editorials in support of Hillary Clinton. USA Today made its first presidential endorsement ever, or actually it was really a disendorsement, saying don't vote for Donald Trump. The Atlantic Magazine, only twice before in its 159-year history, once for Abraham Lincoln in 64 against Barry Goldwater for Lyndon B. Johnson. We've seen the Arizona Republic, never before in its history has it endorsed a Democrat. This goes on and on. This has been happening.
There's no daily newspaper or magazine that has endorsed Donald Trump. Now, that's not the same as saying endorsing Hillary.
What about the New York Observer, which is owned by his son-in-law?
I don't know. Is that a daily?
No, it's a weekly.
That's not a weekly. That's why every daily. Yeah. So my hedge was good one there. Mm-hmm. There are three dailies that have supported Gary Johnson, which I bet they regret right now. Gosh, what a terrible candidate. And then there are some like USA Today, which said we just can't force ourselves to say vote for Hillary, but definitely do not vote for Trump. That's unprecedented. Now, I'm the one who says, you know, endorsements never even mattered, even when newspapers did have some clout, and so especially not now in the digital age. But I thought maybe just the sheer weight, the number, would mean something this time.
I agree with you.
I talked to my 30-year-old son. He's not even a millennial. He's on the edge. And he said yesterday, he goes, oh, you're dreaming. Doesn't mean a thing. People aren't even reading him.
No, I think you're right. I hate to say this, Rosemary.
Yeah, but
I think you're right.
Old, Alan.
No, but I think the sheer weight of the fact that he can't generate a single endorsement.
Not a single one. Isn't that amazing?
Yet, and that factoid gets out there among the people who understand that, even if they don't like editorials.
Yeah. It's sort of like a cumulative weight adds up. And while people may not be reading the editorials, and certainly we know Donald Trump doesn't read, literally, he says he doesn't
Atlantic
read.
Atlantic says that. It does not appear he reads. That's in the editorial.
It does not appear that he reads. So probably most, no, I shouldn't say most of his supporters, but I think probably a lot of his supporters also don't read.
But, you know, Rex, here's the problem. We're seeing something very weird in this election, which is that for the first time, many people think we did it all the time, but the media has given up on objectivity. They think that Donald Trump, led by the Washington Post, is so extraordinarily awful a candidate that we are going to speak out against him. So doesn't that reinforce the impression that we're biased, that of course we're going to be against Donald Trump because we don't like conservatives, we don't like people like him. But, so this could end up hurting us while we're being our most principled.
But here's what I'm thinking. Yes, many newspapers consider this guy to be so dangerous that they can't fool around, that they've got to do this. And the New York Times, I think, is right up there, having lost a certain amount of objectivity on this. However, I do think, God help Hillary Clinton when she's elected president, because there's going to be some remorse among the press for having gone that far over on the objectivity.
Not remorse. You're right. The press goes after whoever has power.
Why don't you guys just write this down right now and say, Alan said there would be press remorse.
I think Rosemary has the right answer here.
Of course you do. You guys always stick together.
After who's in power. I also don't quite agree that everybody has given up on objectivity. I would say there's a more aggressive challenging. There's been what a lot of media have given up on is false equivalence, is false balance.
You are such an apologist.
We've given up on trying to pretending that the lies of Mr. Trump are the same as the lies of
I agree with you that. I think that's right. But to someone who's not in the business, who's looking at the history of this coverage, what does it look like? It looks like, oh, they're all ganging up on Trump.
Yeah. Mark my words, there'll be remorse.
It's not remorse. The effect probably is the same, though, Alan. So you're going to claim victory no matter what.
I certainly am.
But once Hillary is in office, my lips to God's ear, then the press definitely will be looking at everything she does under that same filter of, is she lying? Is she covering up? Does she have her emails? Where's her email on this topic? All of that is going to happen.
Sure. Well, and plus, it'll be interesting to see how the media cover the impeachment. By which I mean the House will move immediately to impeach Hillary Clinton. I believe it is as clear as day that they will move to impeach her and trump up charges, pardon the expression, and we will have a second Clinton impeachment.
Mm. Jeez.
So, you know, you can see the handwriting on the wall. It's going to happen.
Mm.
So
it's like matching impeachments. That's kind of cute.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
Just remember what Alan said, remorse.
Okay. That's it. Alan Chartok, Rex Smith, and Rosemary Armeo, we are grateful to have you join us. By the way, if you ever miss this show, you can catch our podcast, you know.
Oh, it's so important.
iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Store, any place.
Or get the WAMC app.
Yeah, do that.
You know, yeah, and then you can get it there. You're so right, Rex. Appreciate
thank you.
That.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
Publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.